As protests against police brutality and widespread calls for the structural reform of American policing continue, many are now looking to Camden, New Jersey, as an example of police reform done right. Back in 2011, Camden was already considered one of the most dangerous cities in the country. By 2012, after budget cuts and layoffs of about half of the police department, the number of assaults involving firearms tripled, and the city reported a significant spike in homicides. Those numbers, combined with deep-rooted corruption, further tainted the department. The city's solution to all this was to disband the Camden Police Department, lay off all the officers, and start fresh. In 2013, the Camden County Police Department rose from the ashes. Former officers had to reapply for the positions they held within the old department, including Chief Scott Thompson. Chief Thompson's goal was to create a new police force that emphasized de-escalation and community engagement. So far, the Camden County Police Department seems to be moving in the right direction. According to data from the department, homicides dropped from 67 in 2012 to 25 in 2019. There's also been a 95% decrease in excessive force complaints since 2014. Barry Friedman, the faculty director of the Policing Project at NYU School of Law and the author of Unwarranted Policing Without Permission, was one of the people tasked with reforming the department. He joined us to discuss the changes that he helped implement.
We started the Policing Project about 5 to 6 years ago with this idea that is not heard of in policing very much, of front-end accountability, meaning that we would work with the police and the community on the front end to set clear rules for how policing would happen. And when the then chief and now co-chair of our advisory board, Scott Thompson, heard about this at a convening we had with law enforcement, he said, come to Camden. I'm just about to roll out body cameras, and I have been trying to figure out how to do this, and you're the answer. And so we came down and we created an online survey, but we also did a couple of large community meetings and we asked a series of questions about how people felt about the body cameras. We wrote a report to the CCPD about the use of the cameras. They then revised their policy in light of that input and moved forward. And he was extremely happy about the way that went in his community.
How has the body camera process gone for Camden? Would you consider them a success in that regard?
I think Camden was a stellar example of how to do this, and I think the community was extremely pleased. But in general, you know, I have to say that I'm disappointed in where we ended up with body cameras, and many people have ended up disappointed because even though they were conceived of as an accountability mechanism, they have been used in many places as yet another surveillance mechanism or a mechanism in which to obtain evidence for prosecution rather than as a tool for accountability. And we could talk about why that's not worked out, but it hasn't in many places.
I just want to talk a little bit also about the context of this moment, Barry. We are hearing calls in many of the protests to defund the police, and that often means reinvesting and reallocating dollars that are going to policing to going to other community needs. Was Camden's police department defunded, or were there reinvestments made and money reallocated from funding the police in the community to funding community events?
I think the problem, Tanzina, which is true everywhere, is that the police budget lives in its silo and then all the other things live in their silo. And I don't know exactly, but I'd be surprised if Camden was different in that regard. I take this call for defunding the police to be a statement about how we're addressing social problems in our communities. And the problem that we have is that we have take a sort of a one-size-fits-all approach, which is no matter what's going on, we seem to call armed individuals to address the problem. And lots of these problems, substance abuse, people without shelter, mental illness, even domestic violence, I could sort of keep going down a list, are not particularly apt to be solved with people who are armed and who are trained in using force and enforcing the law. And for what it's worth, that's actually not a point on which you'll get a lot of argument from police officers themselves. And so I think there is a deep need to look closely at how we are addressing these problems in society. And it is all wrapped up with how we're thinking about public safety and policing.
You mentioned tools of surveillance. We're looking at license plate readers. I did a ride along with a police officer in Camden a few years ago, and that was one of the technologies that they were touting as a success. They were able to pinpoint gunshots with surveillance cameras. So was that the vision, or was it less technology and more, quote unquote, community policing?
Camden did two things, which I think, you know, many departments that are progressive minded are doing. So first, the departments that can afford it are, you know, rushing toward technology. And that shouldn't be a shock. It's true in our personal lives. I mean, technology just overcame us. And of course, you adopt the tools that it involves. Community policing, which is one of those phrases that can mean, you know, anything to anybody. It sort of exists in the eye of the beholder. I think there, Scott Thompson, the then chief, and the current chief actually is also great, Joe Isaki, they really get it. And there are a few departments that get it, but too many that don't. If I could just take a word, what happened is that back after urban strife in the 1960s, where communities of color, particularly black communities, were rising up, the Kerner Commission found that there was a lot of alienation in those communities with the police and recommended community policing. And so we all jumped on that bandwagon. But as we rolled into the war on drugs, the idea of community policing as a holistic way of interacting with the community got shoved aside. And there were the quote-unquote community police who did the sort of nice meet and greets with the community. And then there were the quote-unquote real police who did policing. True community policing is holistic. It's not community policing. It's policing. It's the police and the community working together to co-produce public safety. And if you're going to do that, you have to take an entirely different attitude toward policing itself.
Okay, so Barry, then the question is, I think a lot of people see things that they think might be performative, right? They'll say, well, the police showed up with an ice cream truck. The police are dancing with us at our local, you know, baseball game. There's video of police doing all these fun and cool things. And people might say, well, is that really community policing? I mean, does it end with the ice cream truck or is there more?
First of all, you know, when I started this, I was maybe improperly disdainful of the ice cream truck or the athletic league, and I mea culpa, because people have to build personal relationships any way they can. And if it's ice cream or athletics or dancing, that's all to the good. The problem is that's not the policing part of it. The policing part of it means being responsive to the community. It means sitting down with the community and actually having the community tell you how it wants to be policed. And that is not something that many police departments are doing. It's just not in their DNA. And, you know, hats off to Camden in that regard. And I think that's the lesson that many of the chiefs that I know that are more successful, which is that they are able to understand that what co-producing public safety means is giving voice to the community to work together and solve problems. And by the way, not just with the police. If you're really going to solve problems in society, you have to be able to call in other social services and other city departments. So it's a holistic way of making communities and neighborhoods safe. And it's a lot of work.
What are the police doing internally? I mean, isn't this also an internal issue for police, given the rates of violence, particularly among Black Americans? Like, does revamping policing also have to include not just technology and the ice cream trucks and facilitating growing personal connections and relationships with the community, but also internal reviews of, you know, what people would call systemic racism within police departments? What role does that play?
Well, I mean, I think it's all part of a really important package. And I just want to make a point, since you pointed to violence in communities, particularly in communities of color where we're working in Chicago, the way we see this, and we don't have, you know, all the results at this point, it's still early on, is, you know, police will tell you all the time that there are troubled neighborhoods and there is gun violence and there are homicides and nobody will help the police. Well, it can't be a shock why nobody will help the police. They don't trust the police because of many years of very aggressive policing that led to over-incarceration and a lot of other ills. And so the theory of doing this the right way is, if you have mutual respect on both sides, if the community and the police are working together, then you're going to get the help to fight violence. And so you can either make communities safe by all working together, or you can try to make communities safe by sending in aggressive policing and tactical squads. But it's that latter thing that has proven just not to work, though we keep doing it.
So that was going to be my next question. What we see there are varying degrees of success in different police departments across the country. I'll read some numbers here from the Camden Police Department. They say, according to their data, that homicides went from 67 homicides in 2012 to 25 homicides in 2019. And the department says there's been a 95% decrease in excessive force complaints since 2014. Given those numbers, one would say this is a successful implementation. But Barry, you've been working on this type of policing reform for a couple years. What do you see that's not working?
I mean, what I see that's not working is this is the refusal in some places to understand that the success to making communities safe is working with the community. And this fallback all too often to there's an uptick in violence, and so what we're going to do is we're going to send in jump out squads. We're going to start stopping and frisking people. We're going to think that we're going to use frequent use of traffic stops as a way to fight crime and violence. And we did a study of this with the Stanford Computational Policy Lab in Nashville and found no relationship whatsoever between those stops and fighting crime and violence. And so I think we have to let go of this notion that we're going to enforce ourselves to safety and start to say, what is safety and what does it mean to the community and how are we going to work with the community to get there? And that's, for example, what I think, you know, I hear coming out of the Minneapolis City Council, and I hope is the direction that they're looking. And we'd love to help.
Minneapolis City Council just announced for our listeners that they would be making changes to how the police department there is funded. We're also, you know, we've just been talking about Camden. Barry, how much appetite is there that you're seeing right now nationwide, given the moment that we're in, given the focus on police brutality, in particular against Black Americans and Black people? How much appetite do you think police departments have right now to change? Are they getting it?
There are 18,000 policing agencies, more or less, in the United States. Nobody has a count. I won't purport to know what 18,000 agencies think. And in addition, you know, I think we should be fair to the police in this way. Take any given department, there's a range of officers with a range of different views. There are officers that are diverse in many ways. They have different ways of thinking about things. The question, and you raise this, is what are we going to systemically and structurally do? And yes, we are hearing calls for this from a variety of places. I think people are listening. That's the hopeful side of me, though the less hopeful side of me worries that we've been here before and not made a lot of progress. But on the hopeful side, I think people are listening. The problem is that, you know, we is twofold. One is just culture. Like, you've done things for so long in a certain way, it's very hard to pivot and change. And the other is a more fundamental problem that I was alluding to earlier, that we haven't fit the job description to who the police are. We have a raft of social issues that we throw at them, and we train them to exercise force and law. So it should not surprise us that what we get in a lot of situations are force and law, or at the least, not solutions to the problems that, after all, frankly, it's unfair to ask the police to solve, but we've thrown at them, like mental illness and substance abuse.
Barry Friedman is the faculty director of the Policing Project at NYU School of Law and the author of Unwarranted: Policing Without Permission. Barry, thanks again for being with us.
Such a pleasure. Take care.
Naima Watson is the Associate Chancellor for Civic Engagement at Rutgers University in Camden and a longtime Camden resident. Naima, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tanzina.
What did you see? Was there an immediate change?
The most immediate change I saw was just this visible increased show of force on the streets of Camden. And what I mean by that is that there were officers everywhere, walking down the major thoroughfares in the city, in the neighborhoods. There was more equipment out, as you could say, in like areas like downtown Camden where the transportation center was at. Really kind thing to show people, you know, we're here, we're present. But it was unnerving at first to see so many officers, especially so many young white officers in the city, and that hadn't been the case in years prior. And so when the transition first occurred, myself, along with other residents, were really hesitant.
When it comes to community policing, what does that mean in Camden?
What it means the most is that officers are just personally engaged with the residents and community members now. So certainly prior to this switchover, there were officers that were deeply invested in the community, talking to leaders, talking to residents, but not as much as what you see it right now. So there has been a balance found between how many officers are on the street walking the beat and what they're doing and how they're engaging. So knocking on doors, introducing themselves to neighbors, hosting fun community events to say, hey, we're here not only to protect and serve, but we're here to get to know you. And the police can respond, sharing their emotions, their experiences, and what it's like to be a police officer. That's dramatically different. And those trust building exercises have been going on for quite some time. And so I think what you saw, you know, a couple of weeks ago at the protest was all of those relationships that had been built paid off.
Does the community, Naima, think that these gestures are genuine or do they feel performative?
I believe they're genuine, and I believe a lot of residents feel that way. So certainly you're not going to get the entire city feeling that the police are there for them and on their side personally. I think with the national history of systemic racism and challenges African Americans and Blacks have faced with policing, that's not going to leave us overnight. Even with community policing practices, there's still going to be that fear. But I do think, by and large, that residents of the city really feel like the police are trying. And this has been a 7-year effort. By and large, residents do believe that the police are genuinely trying to change the relationship.
So we've seen a decrease in homicides, at least according to the department. In 2012, there were 67 homicides. In 2019, there were 25, Naima. Can, in your opinion, is that attributable to having police reform, having more cops on the street, having better technology? What do you attribute that to?
I think it could be attributed to all of those things. You had mentioned the technology earlier. Again, a little bit unnerving when the technology was rolled out, to know that there's cameras everywhere, to know that you're, you know, being listened to by, you know, listening devices that were trying to pick up gunshots in the area. So it took a while to learn how those things were going to benefit the community and not be seen as a form of, you know, true surveillance on the day-to-day individual, what they were doing. So I do think that technology, coupled with, you know, having a full complement of officers, which we had not had in Camden prior to 2012, and these engagement efforts of getting to know people so that when crime happened, when violence happened, you can go back to that neighborhood. People don't feel as scared to talk to you about those incidents. They don't feel as worried that they have to maintain anonymity for fear of retribution. So I think all of those things in concert with each other is what has gotten us to this place. And so I think when people ask, you know, has community policing worked? I think absolutely. I think our data points don't lie. And it's great to see Camden being highlighted in this way for our policing, where, as you know, for decades, we were highlighted for being the most dangerous city in America. This is a huge about face.
Naima, is there anything that you think still remains to be done as the Camden Police Department moves forward?
I do. I think that they have to continue with the efforts they've currently laid out. I think, you know, there has been corruption in the past in the police department before this transformation. So I think transparency in terms of the officers who are in the police department that have these behavioral issues in their background, community should know about them. They should be aware of them. But policing is not going to solve all of the issues in the city of Camden. Policing is only one strategy. And so we have to ensure that jobs come back to Camden, that economic investment is here in the city. We have to make sure that the schools maintain the right path forward by educating our young people in Camden. We have to make sure that health disparities are eliminated, because all of those things are going to be the things that drive crime. So yes, you can decrease using community policing and technology, but that's only as good as the other efforts that surround the community to uplift it. And so as people are thinking about these strategies across the country, what does defunding the police mean? What does community policing mean for African Americans who have been systematically oppressed? That's one measure of how we change the country, and it's absolutely important, but we also have to look at all of these other measures that impact our lives on a daily basis.
Naima Watson is the Associate Chancellor for Civic Engagement at Rutgers. Naima, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.